from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, members of the Senate consider two major pieces of legislation. One, to increase the state's tobacco tax. Another, to get rid of concealed carry permits. That chamber, however, has put off taking up changes to an abortion ban until tomorrow. A new report details the steps lawmakers should take in order to balance the state's budget into the future. And a special report tonight on a program in West Virginia's prison system supplying newly trained service dogs to West Virginia veterans and children. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Lawmakers are now more than halfway through this legislative session and have taken steps to balance the 2016 budget. That fiscal year ends in June. It's the 2017 budget, though, that lawmakers will begin to focus on as the session comes to a close. Governor Tomlin has already presented his 2017 budget proposal to lawmakers, and here to discuss that proposal is Ted Bettner. He's the executive director of the West Virginia Center on Budget and Policy. Ted, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Astrid. Appreciate it.
Ted, I do these interviews all the time with the governor, with lawmakers, and this year they're all saying it's coal, it's natural gas. That's why we're in the situation that we're in. But in your report detailing the governor's budget, that's not the only reason.
No, this is the fourth year of a big budget gap that we've had. So it's been a persistent problem. It's a structural one. In essence, we have a revenue problem due to tax cuts that have been put in place since 2007 that are draining at least $400 million from our coffers every year because of these tax cuts. And these are making it very difficult to fund important programs and services and investments that we need to make as a state to grow a really strong economy with good paying jobs.
So that budget gap, the 2016 gap, we're talking about $381 million. Lawmakers have also passed a couple supplementals to deal with that. But there were two major sticking points in Governor Tomlin's proposal to close the gap, a tobacco tax increase and a telecommunications tax increase.
Yeah, there were both those. And this is on top of a budget gap for this same fiscal year of $195 million that was closed last year. So we're well over $500 million. What the governor has proposed, which is a balanced approach that looks at increasing the tobacco tax to $1.55 and also imposing a sales tax on telecommunications services. So on your cell phone bill, there's no sales tax on that service, and there could be very soon. That's one of the proposals for the 16 and the 17 budget. But unfortunately, one of the bad things about it is the tobacco tax increase isn't enough to really ensure that we have enough revenue in our state to make the important investments that we need. And it's also not enough money because it's just a 45-cent increase. It's not going to deter a lot of teenagers and others from smoking and help bring down health costs that are good for all of us. And these are some other things that we need to be looking at in order to make sure that we build a stronger economy here in West Virginia.
So as lawmakers progress into this session, they'll work on closing the 2017 budget gap as well, which is even bigger. It's $466 million. Included in that proposal from the governor to close that gap is $77 million in budget cuts to services and to programs. As you all looked through the budget, is there anything that sticks out to you as far as those cuts go?
Yeah, I mean, this is the fourth year in a row of drastic cuts to higher education, and there's no way we can build a strong economy in West Virginia. There's no way we can ensure that more kids get to college and have good paying jobs if we keep cutting higher education. Just to give you an idea, since 2008, we've cut higher education by over $100 million. And in this budget, we're gonna cut it by another 12. And in the 16 budget, we're cut it over $20 million. These are things that we shouldn't be doing. We rank last in the country in the share of workforce, our workforce that has a post-secondary degree. So this is the last thing we should be doing if we really want to build a strong economy into the future, because it's these investments that we make that are so important. And when you have tax cuts that take these resources away, it makes it very difficult. It's kind of like having a car without the engine. It just won't go unless we have the resources we need to build out to provide the building blocks for a strong economy in the state.
Before I ask you to give us recommendations and to decide what lawmakers should really do, I want to bring up one more point, and that's that the Republican majority has been very critical of President Obama. But in your report, you say the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare as it's commonly known, actually saved the state $15 million despite the Medicaid expansion that Governor Tomlin went through, which put more people on the Medicaid rolls in the state. So then where did we see that savings?
Well, the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, used to be a part state federal matching program. It was about $8. We put in two for every $8. And now that's completely covered by the federal government. The state used to have a high risk pool for insurance. We don't need that anymore. So these are savings. And there's savings all across agencies too, like corrections now. A lot of the people that are in in the facilities are now covered by Medicaid when the state paid that before. These are just some of the savings that we're seeing from Medicaid expansion. We should in the future have a much healthier workforce and population. And these are things that aren't counted in the report as well.
So with all of the things that we've discussed, where should lawmakers go? What should they do as they look to the 2017 budget?
Well, I think they should take a balanced approach. There are some places that we can reduce spending, especially in corrections, and we can make some investments in interventions in juvenile services and reinvest that money in programs we know working instead of locking kids up. And there's things that we can do on the lottery side, like Greyhound breeding, the subsidies that we do. I don't think we need to be spending $20 million a year on that. But we also have a revenue problem, and I think we need to address that. We can expand the sales tax to cover more services. Like when you get your hair cut, you don't pay a sales tax on that, but if you get your lawn cut, if it's a professional service, you'll pay a sales tax on that. That doesn't make much sense. There's also things to make sure that we're all paying our fair share here too, because low and moderate income people in West Virginia actually pay a higher share of their income and taxes than high income people too. So we have a very upside down tax system. And there are steps that we can take to reverse that will also give us the resources we need to have a strong economy in the state.
When it comes to higher education, obviously lawmakers have made a choice. Mm-hmm. They've chosen to cut higher ed as compared to other things. Is there anything for them to do except just give them more money? Is there any revenue measures they can put in place to dedicate to higher ed?
Absolutely. I mean, some of the ones that we mentioned in our report would be a really good step in that direction to do that. Like I said, I mean, just give you an example, since 2008, tuition has increased by over a third in West Virginia at the public university level, and that's directly related to those cuts we make. So we're just piling more and more debt on students, and when we're asking them to come back here, live in our state, they're having trouble, buying a home, making that money. They're moving back in with their parents. I think these are the last things that we want to do. We want to make West Virginia a good place to live, work, and raise a family, and part of that is to ensure that we have affordable higher education and that we're not low-income people aren't getting shut out of that process and more can go to college.
I assume as they work on the budget, you'll be following the process?
Yes, I will.
Ted, thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thanks, Ashton.
A bill to help aid the state's budget was on the agenda for senators this afternoon. Proposed by the governor, the bill would increase the state's tobacco tax. It's a measure the Senate's finance chairman says is becoming more and more palatable for his chamber as the state's revenue deficit for the 2017 fiscal year looms. The Senate Finance Committee took up a revenue-increasing bill Tuesday, introduced on behalf of Governor Tomlin. The bill would up the state's cigarette tax by 45 cents per pack, as well as increase the tax percentages for other tobacco products. Finance Chair Mike Hall says he realized months ago it was time for lawmakers to begin discussing ways to bring more money into the state's coffers. And whether it's for health or revenue reasons, Hall says members of the legislature seem willing to at least consider the tobacco tax.
It's not as broad-based as I would like to see it if we're going to do a revenue measure. There are broader-based taxes possibly that don't just affect one population. But this is the one that's been bandied about around this building for a long time.
The governor's bill would implement the tax hike in time to aid the 2016 budget year, which ends in June. But Hall expects the bill to change form as it moves through the committee process. Over in the Senate's Judiciary Committee, members took up a bill that was removed from the agenda Monday. The committee's chair, Charles Trump, said that decision was made to give members more time to consider it. The bill would remove the permitting process to carry a concealed weapon in West Virginia. Before the meeting, Trump said his committee would consider a strike and insert amendment or a new version of the House-approved bill.
I think the strike and insert that we're going to lay upon the table today is going to eliminate the tax credit that the House put in the bill.
Those tax credits were added for any person who decides to go through the permitting process, even after the legal requirement is removed. That may include West Virginians between the ages of 18 and 21, or anyone who wants to carry a concealed weapon in another state that has a license reciprocity agreement with West Virginia. Governor Tomlin vetoed a similar bill last year, but Trump says he expects members of his committee to offer a variety of amendments. One thing Trump is sure the bill will include, though, is stricter penalties for people who unlawfully carry a weapon or commit a crime using a weapon.
Obviously, an object of the bill is to make it easier and to quit charging people fees when they're law-abiding citizens. At the same time, the concerns that have been expressed by law enforcement, we want to address. And bad people with guns, people who have criminal records are not allowed to have guns, we're going to ramp up penalties for those people if they strap on a weapon.
Those increased penalties were not discussed at length in the House as members in that chamber voted on the bill.
The Senate's Judiciary Committee considered several amendments to the concealed carry bill this afternoon, but decided to finish their discussion tomorrow morning. The Finance Committee also put off voting on amendments to Governor Tomlin's tobacco tax increase until tomorrow afternoon. We'll bring you those conversations tomorrow on our show. Members of the Senate also unanimously approved a bill today to allow restaurants, wineries, and other retailers to begin selling alcohol at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Current law doesn't allow those sales until 1 p.m. The bill has been affectionately referred to as the brunch bill in the past several sessions and has been approved multiple times by the Senate. It's in the House where that bill tends to slow. In the lower chamber, delegates approved an amendment to a pipeline safety bill. Liz McCormick joins us to discuss the bill introduced at the request of Governor Tomlin.
Thanks, Ashton. House Bill 4323 was on second reading in the House today, the amendment phase. The bill requires pipeline operators to report an accident or emergency at their facility to the State Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management within 15 minutes or face a fine of up to $50,000. Today, delegates considered one change on the House floor.
The House's Energy Chair, Woody Ireland, proposed the amendment to the full chamber Tuesday. His change adjusts the definition of a pipeline facility, exempting pipelines that are 4 inches in diameter or less and service a farm or residence.
The reason for that was to try to get the thing to really address issues that were high risk and really did impact folks' safety. Now, the governor's bill, as it was proposed, talked about all pipelines, and this was just a clarification of what a pipeline facility really meant.
Ireland agrees that pipelines serving the oil and gas industry should be held to the reporting requirements, but small pipelines on personal property should not face such steep penalties. The fines for the failure to report an accident within 15 minutes range from $2,500 to $50,000. Ireland's amendment was passed unanimously by members in the House. Some citizens interested in the bill, though, have voiced concerns over the $50,000 penalty, suggesting it's actually too small and pipeline operators will be able to pay off any emergency incident easily. Ireland disagrees.
Well, that's a pretty stiff penalty, and it's consistent with the other penalties that DEP have leveled on other commercial enterprises such as chemical industry and so forth. So $50,000 is pretty stiff, and it's not something that people are going to take lightly.
Ireland says the industry is also struggling financially because of the decline in natural gas prices, and the penalty will be more than enough of an incentive to report the incident.
House Bill 4323 will be up for a final vote in the chamber tomorrow.
Tonight, we continue meeting your lawmakers with this group from Central West Virginia.
Thank you.
Ron Miller is a senator from Greenbrier County. A Democrat, he represents the state's 10th senatorial district, a position he was elected to in 2010. Senator Miller is a Baptist minister who leads two churches in the Greenbrier Valley. Delegate Nancy Guthrie was elected in 2006 to the House of Delegates. She represents the state's 36th House District from Kanawha County. Delegate Guthrie is a Democrat. She serves as the Minority Vice Chair of Finance, Natural Resources, and Transportation Committees. Guthrie is a former aide to U.S. Senator Robert C. Byrd. Larry Rowe is a Democrat from Kanawha County. He represents the House's 36th District and was elected in 2014. Rowe serves as the Vice Chair of the Small Business and Economic Development Committee. Before his most recent election, Rowe served as a member of the House from 1996 until 2000, and then was elected to the State Senate, serving one term from 2000 to 2004. Brad White was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. A Republican, he represents the 36th House of Delegates District from Kanawha County.
About 9 years ago, a program to train service dogs launched in West Virginia prisons. The Department of Corrections says Paws for People is helping the inmate trainers learn patience and compassion. Roxy Todd visited one of West Virginia's correctional centers participating in the program to meet an inmate trainer.
These are the dogs, about 15 of them, mostly golden retrievers. This is the state prison at St. Mary's, where the dogs are being trained as service animals. St. Mary's is one of five state prisons in West Virginia that trains service dogs as part of a program called Paws for People. The program started in 2007 at the Hazleton Federal Prison, and a couple of years ago it moved to the state prisons. Stefan is an inmate here, and for the last 10 months, he's been working to train an English cream golden retriever named Leo.
Since I have had Leo, he has taught me things such as a lot of things about myself, such as myself having anger problems, tolerance problems, because when you're dealing with dogs, you have to have tolerance and be able to control your anger. And if you have them problems and you don't really recognize it, they'll bring it out at you. And either you're gonna get it together or you're just not gonna have them anymore.
Stefan is one of 32 inmates who was selected to be part of the Paws for People program at St. Mary's. Patrick Morandi is a warden here.
The dog stays with these guys 24 hours a day. These dogs, there's a primary handler and there's a secondary handler, and they're paired up. I'm not real sure on how they get paired up. That is something between a mentor and the program. But when they get paired up, this is their whole job is to watch these dogs 24 hours a day. They bathe them, they care for them, they feed them, they train them, which training is any time that they're with them.
But after months of training, today is what's known as the bump, when the dogs will meet their prospective new clients. For the inmates, this means their dog is about to leave the prison. Amanda Anderson works at St. Mary's, and she manages the Paws for People program here.
There's a lot of tears. The toughest guy in here cries whenever his dog leaves. I couldn't imagine what they go through. I struggle sometimes, you know, because you do get attached. So, and with them, I mean, they're putting everything they have into that dog. But they know it's for a good cause, but it's still hard.
Oh, yeah, to see the dogs leave, it's always tough seeing them leave because they grew up with you. You know, I mean, you played a part in the getting them to where they need to be to go to somebody. And it's horrible seeing them leave. But you know it's for a good cause. That's what makes it a lot easier to look at. It's for a good cause. And you know you played a part in making somebody else's life better. That's what makes the feeling worth it. It's like it's a relief. It's a relief to us Well, let me say it's a relief to me in particular, because I'm one that's always, my whole life, have been in trouble. So to finally give back, it's giving back not because somebody told me to, because I wanted to. And that's why it's a relief to see that you're actually doing something positive without being told you have to do it. It feels good to take a step and do something on your own that's actually good and be proud of it.
CC Miller is the Deputy Operations Officer for the Paws for People Foundation. She says the inmate trainers go through a kind of emotional transformation as they realize the impact of what they're doing.
But that's the thing with them, is they're so humble, and this program has given them something that no other program has given them, and that's a piece of themselves back that they lost.
I'm sure, based on what I've seen statistically, the guys in that program are much more well-behaved than guys in our general population area that we have out here.
During their training, the dogs learn 100 commands that they'll be able to use to serve a disabled client, like retrieving things from a fridge. The bump is a two-day event that takes place inside the prison's gymnasium. In front of a crowd of people, the dogs are introduced to their new clients one at a time.
I was apprehensive on having a dog, how a dog chooses its client, until I went and saw one. And, you know, it is a very emotional time. It's a very trying time for some of the clients to come into a facility. You know, they have anxiety issues anyway coming in here, but they come in and sit and they have a dog, and you'll actually see a dog who may not pay any attention to the client when he walks up to him. And in itself, that's sad. But then you'll see another dog walk through that just wants all the attention from that individual. That dog may have passed on three other person, but the one person, it has this aura effect or whatever. So it's really there. And until you really see the bump process or see what they're doing, I was skeptical. I can't speak for you, but I was skeptical until I saw the big picture.
Often, the dog will bump up against someone and nestle against their body when they feel the strong bond with a person.
The bump reminds me, too, of an extent of that the client, the dog senses things in them rather to the nature of whether they want to be there or not. Not so much as they're angry, but so much as what they're going through, in my personal opinion, that they sense that. And if they can't deal with it, they don't want nothing to do with them. And that's beautiful.
I asked Stefan, if Leo chooses his new client tomorrow during the second day of the bump, what will it be like to let go?
What will help me get over that? I know I'm going to get another dog. But he's still not this dog, but I know I'm going to get another dog. And what's going to help me get over it is knowing that he's going somewhere that he's needed. He's not needed here. I might say I need him, but there's another one coming behind him. He's going where he's needed, where he can do some good for somebody, where he can make somebody else's life better. And he will. He'll make somebody else's life better. Today is Leo's birthday. He is a year old today. And I know I'm not gonna have him too much longer, but while he was here, he made me happy.
The second day of the bump, Leo the dog did find his match. Leo will be working as a medical alert service dog for a civilian client in Georgia who has post-traumatic stress disorder. Meanwhile, Stefan has a new puppy named Nolan that he's training as his next service dog. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in St. Mary's.
Tomorrow, we look at two counties who are struggling financially in the wake of the downturn of the coal industry in the state. Senator Ron Stallings from Boone County and Senator Bill Laird from Fayette County join us to discuss the ailing school systems in the counties they hail from and the underlying financial problems. That's tomorrow on our program. Also tomorrow, live on the West Virginia Channel at 11 a.m., members of the West Virginia Senate will vote on a bill to limit one of the country's most common second trimester abortion methods. Senators will be able to amend that bill on its third reading. You can watch that discussion and vote live tomorrow morning on the West Virginia Channel. Again, that's at 11 a.m. You can also watch live on our website, wvpublic.org. For now, this has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.